Of our speakers with us, so I think we can get started. Hopefully more people join, and we can get started now. Welcome everyone to Informal Spaces. We try to do this every Thursday. Sometimes we have other episodes on different days. You can follow us on Twitter to see any time that we are having one, as well as recaps and reminders. Please follow Informal Inc. and Hyphidus Cosmos for more information. The proposal that we're talking about today is already on chain, but the forum post is still open, so please join us there for more discussion. A little bit of housekeeping. Anything we talk about in this Twitter Spaces is not investment advice. We just talk about what we're working on and how the community feels. You can read the Informal Systems blog for more information. We just posted an FAQ. If you haven't seen that yet, please check it out. And I think we can go ahead and kind of dive into the meat of what we wanted to talk about. Jahan posted a really like great thread yesterday on the things that we're looking forward to working on in 2024. So if Jahan, you want to take it away.
Yeah. I just wanted to, I think that like basically a lot of my thinking this year has been around, you know, looking at a lot of the other shared security solutions that are coming up, and trying to imagine what, you know, what the market for shared security is going to look like in the future. And how to position the hub in that market. So, with interchain security, and I mean, you know, with actually it's kind of similar to Polkadot or even roll up L1s. You have a chain that's offering security to basically other independent chains, that's basically you know, that's good right now. So like right now with interchain security or by launching a rollup or a Polkadot parachain, you can kind of launch your own chain that gets security from another larger chain. But I think that in the future, there's a lot of like restaking protocols, Eigenlayer, Mesh Security, Babylon, and these kind of work where there's sort of like, you can, like if you have tokens on one chain, you can stake them on another chain, and that's pretty straightforward with like mesh security or Eigenlayer. But there's also with Babylon, it's pretty interesting because they had to do like some crazy cryptography to make it work on Bitcoin, because Bitcoin doesn't have a very advanced you know, scripting system. But in any case, it's like with that, you're gonna be able to like if you start up a chain, you can in theory get security from anywhere. So you don't need to come to like some specific, you know, some specific like shared security thing to get security, basically. And so I want to think about how to like, you know, position the hub in that world. Because like, let's say with mesh security is one of the earlier sort of, I think Eigenlayer probably started around the same time, but with mesh security, it's like, if you think about mesh security just in the Cosmos space, the Cosmos hub is pretty well positioned there because it has the most market cap of any Cosmos chain. So, so you know, it's in a good position to sell security to other Cosmos chains. But that's pretty decent, and we're going to definitely capitalize on that. We're not putting a huge amount of resources ourselves into mesh security development, but we follow along with it. We do assist the team on some things like with cryptographic equivocation slashing. We're definitely gonna make sure that the hub is, you know, one of the first Cosmos chains running it. But it's not really like you know, in the Cosmos space, it's going to be big. But once you have like Eigenlayer coming in or Babylon coming in, they're going to be bringing in security from Ethereum and Bitcoin. And it's just going to be like way, way more security. So I think that for any given chain that's providing security through Mesh Security or Eigenlayer or Babylon, I think they're all going to converge into kind of being the same protocol, actually. But for any chain that's like off providing security, selling security, it's going to be like, that's going to be a good thing to do. Because it's just another way to monetize the asset, but it's not like going to be some kind of unique selling point. Like every chain is going to sell security. And it's just going to be more about like, if you're staking a certain asset, you can always, you know, go and you can stake it in a lot of different places. So it's kind of going to disrupt the model we have now of like proof of stake chain kind of being like the single place that, that its asset can be staked. So where that puts the hub is that if you have like, you know, like I said, if you have Bitcoin, Ethereum coming in, other assets, and everything's all kind of interoperable and stakeable between chains and stuff like that, the hub doesn't necessarily really have a like unique selling point with, you know, if it's using mesh security or whatever. So I've been thinking about what kind of like services will, what kind of security services will sort of last in this world. So one of them, which motivated the Atomic IBC paper, is if you can create a collection of chains that are able to communicate with each other instantly, that's still like kind of a, that's a platform where you still have a network effect. And like, because if you're not part of it, you're not going to be able to communicate instantly with the other applications. It's going to go asynchronously. Like, I mean, all Cosmos chains connect right now asynchronously, and it's very important. Bridging is a very important thing, but it's also kind of, the interactions over bridges are always going to be slower and more error prone. So having the ability for a set of chains to sort of interoperate, like, you know, atomically is, I think, still going to be a valuable thing in this, you know, world of fluid shared security. Another one, which is actually a little bit more, probably a little bit more practical short term and sort of fits right in with improvements we're making to interchain security anyway, is the idea of bundling. So, and this, I posted about this on Twitter last night. Basically, if you're somebody and you're like, you're staking your tokens, you know, you're staking, let's say you're staking your Bitcoin or whatever, you don't necessarily want to have to figure out, like, you're not necessarily going to want to figure out like what all these different chains are if you're trying to stake in a lot of different POS ecosystems. You're not going to want to figure out what these different chains are, what they do. You're not going to want to have to research, you know, what the best validator is on each, on a bunch of little chains. You're probably going to prefer to stake your tokens in one place and kind of get access to the POS yield of, you know, a lot of different chains at once. So I think there's definitely going to be a premium on sort of simplicity and having a one-stop shop. And you see stuff like this, I think, a little bit related in DeFi. You see like where there's these sort of aggregating things, like Yearn, for example, where you kind of put your tokens in a vault and it will sort of manage things for you. But I think in the shared security landscape, we're going to see stuff like that too, like where you delegate to one validator on one system and you get a bunch of chains at once. So interchain security is actually like a perfect fit for that sort of model, because you have validators and they'll be running a lot of different consumer chains and they'll be getting yield from all those consumer chains. And so if somebody's coming from Bitcoin and they are like, you know, staking their Bitcoin, they want to stake their Bitcoin on Cosmos, most likely they might stake their Bitcoin on Osmosis. I mean, yeah, I would, but they're also most likely, if they want to get a collection, if we can get interchain security, you know, in the next year, by the time a lot of the stuff comes online, if we can get a lot of consumer chains in, I think they're going to see like, you know, staking on the Cosmos Hub as a way to access like a lot of these different chains. And so that's what I would call bundling. And the interesting thing about that is I'm aware of other projects that are kind of doing this like from scratch with Eigenlayer especially. But it's like the hub with interchain security is actually perfectly set up to play this bundling role. And we already have, you know, we already have it working. We have momentum. So I think that's what's really interesting about this. And basically, to pursue this model, all we really have to do is keep pursuing improvements to interchain security. So it's nice because it's not like a whole new direction. It's just getting momentum up on interchain security, and then that's going to start to become an attractive place for people to stake from other ecosystems as the fluid shared security market sort of starts to take place. I guess I'll pause there. I'm talking for a while. If there's any questions or anything.
Yeah, I see some folks in the audience who replied to your thread, as well as some of the things we've posted. We do have, you know, an agenda of things we want to get through, but also this is an open discussion. So if you have any questions about the product side or anything Jahan talked about, please feel free to let us know and I will promote you. Jahan, another thing that you mentioned in your thread that I think quite a few members of our community are concerned about, you talked about reducing validator costs. Could you go into that a little bit more?
Yeah, that's a good point. So the scaling interchain security, improving it sort of goes hand in hand with reducing validator costs. So, you know, I don't think it can, you know, we need to reduce validator costs to make it scale. So that's, to me, like to you know, this bundling concept works no matter what, but it's kind of what interchain security is in a way. It's a way to get yield from a lot of different proof of stake chains at once. You know, regardless of whether that's only on native Atom staking or also helping to bundle stake from other ecosystems. But yeah, so the validator cost thing, I think it's kind of interesting. I don't want to blame the bear market, but obviously bear market does make any problems in economics more obvious. And so the issue is that validators, they don't necessarily see a lot of return from running consumer chains. So we're running two consumer chains. There's Neutron and Stride. And I think actually on Neutron, I don't want to speak out of turn, I guess, on Neutron's tokenomics. I wasn't involved with planning it very much. And I think they also had legal reasons for doing things the way they did, but they don't really have any inflation on Neutron. So in proof of stake blockchains, having inflation is kind of a way to sell transaction volume in the future. It's like a way to sell, like, sell future transaction volume. So it's like, basically, you're sort of like, by inflating a token, you're sort of saying, hey, if you stake, then you can get more of this token, and the token might be worth a lot because the platform is going to get heavy use in the future. And you obviously can't like sustain something forever on that. And that's why I think we've also seen this bear market chains that have very high inflation that were doing great in the bull market when they launched, are now not doing so great because the inflation is kind of more than it really should be. But it is also useful. If you have a platform that has a lot of potential, so like Neutron has people consider it to have a lot of potential. It has a high market cap. And it doesn't really have any inflation. It means that the people staking or validators, you know, validators running nodes and people staking aren't really getting a huge amount of they're not really getting future transaction volume. All they're getting is the transaction volume from today. So I think that probably if Neutron had had done something, Neutron did a huge airdrop to the Cosmos Hub. So a lot of Atom holders got a lot of Neutron, some percentage of the supply. But if they had done that, like released over 3 years as part of the ICS rewards, I think we would actually be all telling a very different story about about how good the rewards from ICS are, because it would be around $10 million a year going into the hub. So the other thing is that Stride is doing pretty respectable. Obviously they're in a bear market too, but they're really solid, kind of like, they do have usage already. But in any case, I think another issue beyond that stuff, that stuff would be cloaked by a bull market. Like people wouldn't realize because they'd be so excited about everything. But I do think we're sort of seeing like the ICS rewards question face to face right now. So one of the things there is, even if you have consumer chains that are performing well, there isn't really any way for validators to balance the cost of their infrastructure against the cost of the capital. So Atom holders are generally validators are at around a 5% commission, and that is on the Cosmos Hub and a lot of other chains too. But that's basically to pay for their infrastructure. that's you're staking with them, and they're going to get that 5%. And so that has been, I suppose, more or less, you know, sufficient to cover infrastructure costs, or at least that's where the market's landed. But with consumer chains, oftentimes the consumer chain is kind of sending sending less to the provider in the form of rewards. So they're only sending 15 or 25%. So a consumer chain needs to be kind of four times as profitable for the validators to get the same amount of rewards and commissions. So one easy fix to this actually is just to have a variable commission per consumer chain, because then like validators can then choose, like, if there's a consumer chain where the rewards are not like matching up with the amount of cost to run a node, the validator can raise their commission for that consumer chain and not raise commission for other consumer chains or the hub itself. And it's kind of like, they don't have to worry about, are people going to think, oh man, there's a high commission validator ripping us off. It's kind of like every consumer chain's commission can be sort of assessed independently, and the market can arrive at a good price for that. So I think that'll help a lot, because that's right now what we're seeing is, like, you know, for Atom holders, they're okay with seeing ICS grow, because it's like, you know, the more the better, why not? But for validators, they're feeling that they're not getting what they need from these ICS chains. So I think having a variable commission for a consumer chain will help a lot. That's a pretty theoretically very simple fix. We're still looking into how to make that happen with Cosmos SDK. The fee distribution system is pretty complicated, but that I think will help. And another one is partial set security. This is actually an idea that was originally Effort Capital originally had, which is kind of like, we had always been talking about, even back in the day, we called it ICSV2 or opt-in security. And that's kind of where not every validator needs to run every consumer chain. And that's good for this, that's good for a variety of reasons, you know, because it's like, first, you know, validators can choose, like if they don't want to run a consumer chain, they don't have to. And then also the validators that continue running a given consumer chain, they are sort of like, you know, getting more of the rewards for running it. So it helps the cost structure on two fronts. So one of the issues with that, which is actually an issue that's faced by any restaking, so Babylon, Mesh Security, Eigenlayer, and opt-in as we have been imagining it, has something called the subset problem, which is where if you don't have like fraud proofs, then you could have a subset of the validators that are malicious, basically all on one consumer chain, and then do something bad to that chain. And then without fraud proofs, there's like no way to slash them. Or also if the chain was ZK provable, then you can make it so the bridges wouldn't work. If they did something bad through incorrect execution. So I don't want to get too deep into the weeds on that one, because it can be complicated. But basically, there's this incentive problem with the security of opt-in security, which can't be solved by anything other than fraud proofs or ZK proofs. And we don't have those in Cosmos right now. So the idea that Effort Capital had was, like, just because all of the validators... Oh, and actually, I'll say, so what stops that from happening on proof of stake chains right now is the fact that there's something called token toxicity, where if validators do something bad, they're just going to lose a lot of money when the token crashes. Like, if validators in the hub took the money out of everybody's wallet and put it into their own wallet, like one third of validators, you know, or especially one third or especially two thirds could do this. You know, they could just change the code, steal everyone's money. Fraud proofs and ZK proofs stop that, because then bridges and stuff can verify that code. Right now, that's something that exists. So what's stopping them right now? What's stopping them is that the Atom would crash in value. So even if they're not getting slashed, if everyone's like, wow, you know, this chain is a joke, the validators just took everybody's money out of their wallet, it's obviously not secure at all, then that chain staking token is going to go down. And so you lose that in systems where only a very small portion of the tokens are actually staked on a consumer chain. Because on a consumer chain, then it's like, you know, it doesn't necessarily implicate Atom as a whole if some small subset of malicious validators do something bad. So the idea that Effort Capital had was, why don't you have some validators run physical nodes, and the validators that are not running, like for a given consumer chain, and the validators are not running nodes for that consumer chain, they can just delegate their stake to the validators who are. And that way you get the full stake of, you know, of the hub, like vouching for every consumer chain. And yet you reduce the infrastructure cost because there's fewer validators actually running real nodes. That's another way to sort of balance the infrastructure cost versus the capital cost. So the full capital is still at risk of slashing, but there are fewer nodes running, and so the infrastructure is cheaper. So of course, there are some things there where we have to be careful. Like, we can't have a situation where only one validator is running a consumer chain, you know, and every single atom on the hub, or that's staked at least, is like indirectly delegated to that one single validator. Because that validator double signed, then like everybody's getting slashed. That'd be a ridiculous situation. So obviously can't have that. And we generally probably don't want to have too few real validators running consumer chains. So I kind of think, I mean, there's different ways to look at this, and this can be tweaked and played with. There might be other ideas, but I think that if you say that, like, let's say 1/3 of validation power needs to run each consumer chain, I think in that case, you actually, I think that's like, in, you know, that's going to be enough. But it's hard to say, like, there's not an exact, I mean, I don't think there's an exact metric, but it's kind of like, I think 1/3 of validation power, the smallest possible number of nodes that could be is 7 right now with the stake distribution. But I think in most cases, it's going to be a lot more. So I think that would be pretty solid. So you definitely have to have the rule that not more than one, not less than 1/3 can run physical nodes. And there are a few different ways to enforce that too, that we've thought about. One way is you could have, like, you could say that like the top 1/3, like, always have to run every consumer chain. And so other validators can come in and they can run them as well. But, you know, if you're in the top 1/3 of power, you have to run every consumer chain, even if other validators are opting in and out. That one's really nice and simple. And it does sort of preserve the fact that even if everybody else sort of opts out of running consumer chain, you'll still have 1/3 of power. But it also kind of, you know, I mean, you could consider it, you know, increasing centralization. Even though a lot of other validators participate, you'll still have this top 1/3 that's kind of more heavily active. But I do like it because it's very, very simple, easy, sort of easy to understand and implement. Yeah. And the other thing is that it also, yeah, go ahead.
Johan, we have a question in the replies. Oh. It says, I'm not sure if you kind of answered this already, but it says, mm-hmm. Is there a research area where validators can use the same infra if hub 4/3 or 4 consumer chains?
The same infrastructure for the hub and consumer chains?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Yeah, that's actually different Twitter spaces, but that's Megablock. So at Atomic IBC would actually have every participating consumer chain sort of run on one consensus, one common process, and that would do that. So that reduces infrastructure costs by doing that. It does also reduce the flexibility. So, you know, if you have a lot of consumer chains that really want to do deep modifications to their consensus, the flexibility is a little bit reduced, but you also get the ability to do atomic transactions. So there's a lot of different trade-offs. These are sort of two different,
topics.
Two different things we're pursuing. Yeah. So,
Murthy, I hope that answered your question somewhat, but if you're interested, like, please let us know and we'd be more than happy to do another, Twitter spaces on that. Johan, I see that Better CEO is on the stage. I don't know if you wanted to wrap up this idea and take their question or
Okay, so to continue what I was saying, I'll just wrap it up. Yeah, so basically, so partial set security, it's like not every validator. Every validator has to stake, or every delegator basically has to stake. If validators don't want to run the physical node, they can say, hey, for this consumer chain, I'm going to sit this one out, but I'm going to let this other validator handle, validate with my stake. And the validators running the physical nodes will get all or like most of the commission involved. And that way it's like the rewards are higher if you're running a physical node. That's also being split fewer ways between those validators. But you still get the full security of the full set. And I just wanted to bring it. And so I was just talking, maybe got a little in the weeds there, but we do want to prevent below 1/3 of validators from running physical nodes, or, you know, maybe another number, but 1/3 is probably good. So I was saying there was one way is just make the top 1/3 always run them. But the other way, also an idea from Effort Capital, was you could have validators kind of sign up to run a consumer chain for like 6 months, let's say, and then they have to run it for 6 months or they get slashed for downtime. And so like that way you also have, and then like the next 6 months segment, they sign up again. So it's like you kind of have this sort of cycle. And that could also kind of almost like an interesting way to sort of like self-regulate consumer chains too, because then it's not up to like governance having a big vote on whether consumer chains should be removed. It's kind of like, if there's nobody who even wants to run those nodes, the consumer chain's not going to run. At the same time, we didn't want to have that happening block to block. Like you could just have your consumer chain disappear tomorrow. So the 6 month thing gives it some, you know, gives a little bit more predictability for consumer chain teams and lets them make other arrangements. They're not going to be part of the shared security zone of the hub. So anyway, back to just one more point I want to make about the Spark set security. You know, like I was saying in that bundling concept. So let's say we have a lot of stake coming in from Bitcoin or from wherever. For many different chains. This also works really well with the bundling thing, because the people delegating the capital, whether it's Atom, Native Stake, or Bitcoin or whatever, they're always going to get exposure of the yield for all the consumer chains in the system. So it keeps it really nice and simple. If you're coming from Bitcoin, you're trying to stake your Bitcoin, you don't necessarily want to have a thing like, you know, where you're staking to some validator and then there's some great consumer chain that gets really, really hyped up or whatever on the hub. And because you were staked to this one particular validator, you didn't get it. It sort of defeats the simplicity of it. So I think the partial set security also kind of works pretty nicely with bundling, which is all about simplifying security instead of making it more complicated. So I think it's a pretty interesting solution for a lot of reasons. And it's also pretty practical. I wouldn't say easy, but it's practical to implement soon. So yeah.
Awesome. Betterseo, did you have a question?
Sure, yeah. Well, first, thanks, Jehan, for all of your insights. It really feels like your ideas can bring resiliency and robustness to the validator set at the hub. And I think you have quite a unique lens on that. So I always enjoy hearing your perspectives. So a comment and a question. I guess the comment is, I think it would be fair to say that 2023 has been a transition year from kind of informal, really driving kind of hub development. And now in 2023, we're leaning more on kind of hub community governance, and Notional has been elected to, you know, lead in the security area, AADAO to do grants. Probably there will be other sub DAOs in the future. And so as we kind of transition more into this community governance-led kind of project organization, if you will, there can be different, you know, developer teams that are approved by Community Gov that might have a code-based contribution that would kind of touch the hub. Or there could be, you know, a security contractor like Notional. There could be two or three or four different security contractors that would all be kind of doing different, very specialized kind of review to keep the hub safe. So the question is, just curious, as we evolve, do you have any thoughts around kind of this decentralized community oriented way of working, and kind of what should be the processes in the two cases that I described for teams to kind of interact with your role, which is, you know, controlling the hub repository, and how do we kind of evolve, you know, further towards kind of healthy interactions in the community as these different roles kind of touch your role?
We certainly don't approve what goes on the hub or not. We can give our opinion on stuff, but ultimately, if the hub team at Informal is like the hub maintenance team, we'll maintain whatever is we're kind of like, we're kind of like the team of last resort to maintain stuff. But so I just want to say that, and I'll touch more on that in a second here. But in terms of process, we've put up this proposal for a CHIPS process, Cosmos Hub Improvement Process. And so it's a little bit sort of loosely based on EIP, which is the Ethereum thing. Basically, that process starts with like discussion. and then moves into specification, prototype implementation, like signal proposal to actually put it on the hub. And the thing I would say is that if there are teams that are, you know, funded or are looking to get funded to put things on the hub, I think it'd be great to open, you know, before the work really commences, to open a discussion phase like forum post for that CHIPS process, so that people can weigh in on whether they think it's a good idea, whether it should go on the hub, kind of before you get to the signaling proposal phase. And the idea is there. I don't know if it's perfect, but the idea would be to sort of front load decision making about this stuff. So before, you know, before a lot of work is put into it. The other thing I would say is that, like I said, you know, our team right now is the hub maintenance team. So we're kind of like the last resort if something needs to get upgraded. Let me just like be specific.
I just want to say it, last resort sounds like we're like the only option at the very end, but it's not that we're the only option, right? Like it's
What I mean is that if there's a dependency on the hub and it doesn't get upgraded, it will block the hub from upgrading. So I'm talking specifically about SDK version upgrades. They're making a lot of improvements to the Cosmos SDK, which underlies everything. And so if there are modules and stuff that aren't getting upgraded, then it ends up being that we may have to upgrade them or hub releases get delayed, right? So, and I think that's going to be the case for anyone. And so I think that's one of the challenges of like, of working this decentralized thing, is that you need to have like maintenance figured out. So I think as part of the CHIPS process, or for any kind of like grant funding of stuff that will go on the hub, that's a Cosmos SDK module, I think it's important to think about how it's going to be maintained, and how the team that built it is going to be like continued to be funded, maybe at a lower level for maintenance going forward. Because it's like with smart contracts, you can deploy a smart contract to a smart contract platform and you don't need to like upgrade the smart contract if the platform gets upgraded, but that's not the case with kind of more SDK based things like we have with the Cosmos SDK.
Terrific. That's really helpful. I guess one quick follow-on question. Could AADAO send grant applicants to the CHIPS process to have some level of kind of community discussion around technical integration matters, maybe as an input into the AADAO's decision-making? This is kind of one point where AADAO doesn't always kind of have the best ability to kind of gather inputs and kind of broader community inputs, especially around those technical integration challenges, might be really useful to the AADAO kind of thought process as the reviewers are looking at a grant applicant.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a great idea. I would also be open to, you know, this is a process that we proposed, kind of just came up with it, be open to feedback on the process itself and whether it's, you know, steps are in the right order or whatever. One of the things about it is that, like, you don't actually really have an actual voted signaling proposal until you actually get into the, you know, the phase where it's actually getting close to being put on the hub. So at that point, a lot of work's already been done, but it's hard to balance kind of, you know, the need not to clog up governance with a bunch of proposals that people don't vote on or whatever, and the kind of the need to get feedback early on. So, yeah, the earlier stages are all in the forum. But I think it'd be great.
I think there are two concerns when external, like third-party developers are like contributing code to Cosmos Hub. One is basically like, the concern around overlapping work, like maybe somebody's already working on something and, you know, you need to know that they're like, we're not like doubling up on the work. And the second is like an ongoing maintenance plan. And I think the CHIPS process actually tries to cover both of them, which is like, you have a discussion period upfront. Everybody knows like exactly what's being proposed and we can discuss together if it's the right thing to be done or not. We can also cover, you know, overlapping work and figure out where we can coordinate on the overlap. And then also we can together come up with a maintenance and integration plan. I would recommend everybody basically to be using the CHIPS process. Anybody who wants to land anything on the hub should be using the CHIPS process.
What is the status of the CHIPS? If I can just stay on this topic one more question and then I'll step down. What is the status of the CHIPS process? Is there a page that we can go to learn more about it? Is it under development? Is it something that there's a kind of team behind? Have there been forum posts? Curious to hear more.
Yeah, there's a forum post. I formatted, there's a forum post about it, which kind of lists the stages. I would love to see more discussion about that, whether those are the right stages and whatnot. I've also been formatting like the initial write-ups of Atomic IBC and partial set security, and also variable commission rates per consumer chain. I've written those up as CHIPS discussion points. So we're not saying that this process is perfect or that it couldn't be tweaked or whatever. But I think it'd be good if we all started following one process for that could unify kind of, you know, additions to the hub. And then, you know, as I was saying, consider maintenance as part of that.
Awesome. Bettercio, thank you so much for your questions. We really appreciate them. And, you know, feel free, please join us on the forum and please review that and let us know if you have any thoughts. And we're excited to see the community really use them and, you know, potentially help the AA DAO process as well. Udit, since you just talked, would you like to maybe go over, we went over pretty heavily some things that we're excited about with the informal hub team. I know people are excited about War Game Thursdays, and you know, could you speak to some of the things that Haifa is excited about next year?
Yeah, totally. Thanks as well. As a general theme, the way I see the work that we're doing right now is that 2023 was really about launching init chain security, and 2024 is a year where we're trying to get to improving the performance and reliability of init chain security. So 2023, you know, the work was really about like making sure that it worked, making sure the validators knew how to run nodes or consumer chains. We spent a lot of time working with various consumer chain teams to, you know, run rehearsals on our replicated security testnet. Come 2024, a lot of our focus is kind of around performance and just making sure that the system is a little bit more reliable. And part of this, one thing that we're really excited about is War Game Thursdays. And so this is building upon the success of Testnet Wednesdays, which is a program we started this year, which was essentially running a bunch of rehearsals, upgrades, and so on with a lot of our engaged validators on the replicated security testnet. I see some of these validators in this call. It's nice to see you all here. But in 2024, we want to do testnet War Game Thursdays, which focuses less on kind of like the operations of running consumer chains, but more on the performance of the network. So this is a day where we'll be encouraging various security teams to come together and launch attacks or do various kinds of performance tests on the network. We'll be using it as a way to kind of benchmark the overall reliability of the network. We've been kind of doing this ad hoc actually in the last month, trying to understand how to best set this up. But War Game Thursdays is going to be our kind of like flagship event next year to really, really level up the performance of in-chain security.
Awesome. Very excited about that. And I know lots of folks are excited about that, both, you know, in this space and also outside of it. So very excited to see those continue. I think if Jahan and Udit are done with kind of our key points of 2024 product type things, we'd love to open it up to the audience for any questions or discussion points, anything you'd like us to speak further on. We'd be more than happy to have you all here. So please raise your hand and I be more than happy to promote you to speaker, or you can leave a reply and we can answer your questions live here. Brian or Alexa, is there anything else you wanted to add to our spaces?
No, I'm great. Udit's speaking for Haifa right now.
First of all, thanks for everyone attending. I would just add some gratitude to everybody's attention and time. I was requesting to speak earlier because I wanted to reply to Better Future about doing some mapping between chips and the AA DAO processes, but I've DM'd him because he jumped off the space, so that's all good. Anyone else who has any questions or thoughts, totally open stage, open mic. Let's get some other speakers up here.
I'm going to play some music for a little bit while people decide if they want to raise their hands. Alrighty, well, please, again, always reach out to us on the forum with any discussion points, and we'd be more than happy to discuss them with you. We're very excited about the proposal and, you know, moving forward in 2024 with the community. So with that, I think we can go ahead and close out if everyone wants to say their goodbyes.
No, yep, bye-bye, thanks.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
There's this principle in Taoism where it's just like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, like just inevitably kind of starts to happen. There's this principle in like Taoism where it's just like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, inevitably it kind of starts to happen.
Chirping on the bird app, listening to nerds flap, wondering why the fuck my timeline's so cursed. It's like everybody's holding heavy bags in Web3. That's why they can't fly, they just drowning in the bird bath, fishing for some dry powder. Watch how we ignite the tower, blowing up their bank accounts, forgetting how to fight the power. Y'all don't even realize how deep this shit goes. They preach an open source, but don't listen to the code. And now it's mutiny, community, uprise. There's no more humility, futility, plus size. Motherfuckers leaking from the wrench down to the bare metal. Which side of the line you bleeding out on when the dust settles? Motherfucking west side shit, needle and noose. Sticking with my armory, Yam, Beto, and Bruce. Repping psychedelic artistry, believing the truth. Like these motherfuckers even need a reason to sue? GM fam.
Worth all the effort? Is it really worth all the fighting? Is it really worth all the drama? And the answer, I think, is a clear no.
They started using Zoom, now we finna zoom out, teaching all these plebiscites what this game's really all about. Little baby bitches when they choose to have fits, all you're left with is kibble when you lose all them bits. And that kibble's just sawdust, the shit is all rust. Not a great look, you're what we call all nuts. And I for one did not see that coming. Cracking open books, yo, that's a lot of money. Meanwhile, over here, rewiring features, more critical thinking, less knee-jerk, more evolution, less shitcoin preachers pretending to be teachers. Y'all just predatory leeches. I mean, please, just look at the track record. A bunch of VC rat fucks sucking up the cheddar. The recipe is two steps, rinse and repeat. Now we all in your butts, and we bring in receipts. GM fam, have a seat.
If you're listening to this, my plea to you would be like, don't have to take a side on it. Just say like, is it really worth this war of attrition? It might cost us a lot more than what can be gained by like fighting this to the bitter end. And sometimes it's better just like move on.
Terror spaces.